Well, good evening. This is Dan Meller, your host for tonight's call. Thanks for being with us. We've got a lot of people on the line and a lot of people on the phones as well, it looks like. What we're going to be talking about tonight is a topic that I put out, Out of Work But Finding Myself. That comes from a recent email I got from a young lady in China who said that it was kind of broken English, but she said that she has no trouble finding a job, but she realizes now she should have been finding herself first. That's a great perspective on how to view this whole issue. Now, I'm going to be covering a lot of territory tonight in the next 48 minutes, looking at some of the statistics, some of the real things that we do encounter out there. But more than anything, this is the time to take a fresh look at yourself. Now, in the 48 Days to the Work You Love materials, and most of you know me from that, or from No More Mondays, or Get the 48 Days newsletter, or perhaps are part of 48days.net, a group where a whole lot of people are taking ideas and turning those into real viable businesses. But anyway, most of you have been hearing my material for a long time. We consider you part of our family here. We have a lot of events out here at the sanctuary and different ways to stay connected, and we love the relationships we've had with lots of you for over the years. But we're getting a lot of emails right now, and I know things are tough out there, and we are receiving thousands of emails from people saying, you know, what do I do? I'm too young, I'm too old, I'm disabled, I had a business and lost it. Just every possible scenario you can imagine we're hearing. And so I wanted to come on tonight and just give people some hope, not an artificial hope, just pie in the sky, but some real tools that you can use to see opportunities that other people do not see, and to recognize things about yourself that you can make yourself a top candidate. We want to help you do all of those things. Let me go right through the bad news to start with. The bad news is that, yes, we are seeing more unemployment than we've seen in a long time. In January, there were 589,000 job losses. In February, they added another 651,000. March, 699,000. That's an all-time record. April, another 539,000. Now, that's over 2 million job losses, and we're just 4 months into the year. But now, here's a very important point. I'm going to come back to this a couple times. One of the companies in that scenario that announced they were going to be eliminating 5,000 jobs was Microsoft. Now, they got a lot of attention, and that's the kind of thing that gets on the front page of the newspaper. Microsoft is eliminating 5,000 jobs. What the newspapers and the news media did not share is that during the same news conference, Steve Ballmer, the CEO of Microsoft, said they would simultaneously be hiring 3,000 new people for new positions to support key areas during this same period of time. Now, that's real common. The news media loves to report bad, alarming, desperate news. That's what makes headlines. They aren't very good about telling us what's really going on out here in the job arena, unfortunately. But that's real typical. A company that's laying off people may be an excellent target for you to approach in your job search. Because companies change, just like any healthy organization does. We see it in nature. You change as an individual. And companies certainly change. So the fact that they're laying off, I mean, just if you think about it, if a company like Microsoft goes through software development, well, they have a lot of people doing research and design, software development. If they're a couple years into the process, what do they need? They probably don't need as much development anymore. They may need a sales force, or they may need customer service. The needs change, so even if they're going to keep their employment numbers the same, they may lay off some people and hire some new ones. It's just a natural, healthy part of any kind of business. I'm just using Microsoft as one example, but there are many, many out there. But don't think that when you hear about all these layoffs that those same companies aren't, in fact, hiring, because most of them are. Well, there's another term. There's a term that I used in the newsletter a few weeks ago, and it's PLSD. And what it stands stands for is post-layoff survivor disorder. Now, inasmuch as many of you may be looking for new opportunities, we also are hearing from people who are terrified because they did not get laid off. They were hoping for a layoff or a severance package. They did not get laid off, and so now they have an increased workload and are trying to keep up with the demands of the company as they continue to expect the same amount of work and do not have the same number of people involved. Just an interesting kind of side note, but people are concerned about their work situation, whether they are in a job or whether they are not, whether they have a business. I mean, every scenario causes some concern right now. We're seeing just kind of a healthy purging in some ways. There are a lot of people who are seeing what's happening as kind of a wake-up call to perhaps long dormant dreams that they've had and finding ways to put legs in those dreams and are excited about that. I'm going to share some of that with you here in a minute. Now, keep in mind also that the government statistics track companies with at least 100 employees. Now, let me kind of put that in perspective for you, because 52.8% of the companies in America have 1 to 4 employees. 52.8%, more than half the companies have 1 to 4 employees. 97.4% of the companies in America have fewer than 99 employees. Now, what does that tell us about where the statistics are coming from? The statistics are theoretically looking at, 2.6% of the companies out there, because they're the ones that are big enough to be on the radar screen of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. There is a whole lot happening in small business America that is not being reported in the statistics. They're not filing bankruptcy. They're not getting bailed out by the government. And they're providing opportunities for people left and right. That's where the growth is. And in many ways, it's taking us back to a much healthier kind of model of business than what we've seen in the last 50 years or so. And if you think back 100 years ago and you wanted somebody to build you a wagon, you would not have guaranteed that person $20 an hour or $45,000 a year. You would simply agree on a set price for that particular item, and when it was finished, you would exchange the product for what you had agreed on a price. That's a much cleaner model of business than what we're seeing now. I mean, it's unrealistic for companies to guarantee income for time. Ultimately, all they can pay for is results. And so companies are finding ways that they can pay for results. Again, it may be intimidating because it's different. But just because it's different doesn't mean that it's bad. And we're going to have to adjust to some new things because the old models of work are going away, never to be seen again. Just not going to happen. I want to interject a couple little things here as we go along. One of the pieces that I wrote some time ago, I told the story of a 92-year-old lady who was moving into a nursing home. As she was being wheeled down the corridor, the attendant began to describe the room. "I love it," the old woman gushed. But the attendant reminded her, "You haven't even seen the room yet." "Well, that doesn't have anything to do with it," she replied. "Happiness is something you decide on ahead of time. Whether I like my room or not doesn't depend on how the furniture is arranged. It's how I arrange my mind." Now, there's an important principle in that little story. You know, really, again, I'm not going to diminish the importance and the severe impact of what's happening right now, but a lot of your success is decided in advance or arranged in your mind. See, circumstances will never determine your amount of happiness. Circumstances only highlight who you already are. Now, about a month ago, I put a note in the newsletter that if you're out of work, just shoot us an email. You know, we would have a drawing every week. And I expected that maybe we would have, you know, with my newsletter list, maybe we'd have 30 or 40 emails that would come in at any given week. Well, that was not to be the case. They have come in by the thousands. At one point, soon after I had that first note, they were coming in at the rate of about 100 an hour. So we've heard from a lot of people, and we certainly empathize with the situations you described, but here's something I want to point out. Now, inasmuch as a lot of those emails were very discouraging, people who are desperate, who think that if the job went away, that their life is somehow you know, forced to start over. They're in a position where from which there's no escape. I mean, certainly a lot of those things and real things to be dealt with. But I also started seeing some very clear patterns in those emails that were very optimistic, where people really did think that this was maybe a new start, a new opportunity. And having been working with people over the last 25 years now who are going through these inevitable changes, you know, I've seen so many people who were terrified when they lost a job or were let go, laid off, downsized, uninstalled, all those fancy terms to keep us from seeing somebody was fired. But they were terrified when that first happened. And yet when we really sat down, created a plan of action, they walked into a new season of their lives, and almost without exception, 18 months after the fact, they'd look back and say, you know what, that was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because it forced me out of the status quo, forced me out of what we sometimes call comfortable misery, into really looking at what my options are, and I went on to a higher level of success in my life. Now, here are some snippets, just little short phrases from some of those emails that I'm describing that we've been getting. Here somebody says, from now on, I'm moving toward listening to my heart and soul. Well, what a great position to take. Here's another one. At first, I was stunned, then upset. Then I thought, wait a minute, this is really a blessing. Here's somebody who says, this in-between time has given me the opportunity to get started with launching an independent training and career coaching practice, which has been a dream of mine. Another gentleman says, I was a journalist for 10 years and was laid off, but that's okay. It's truly turned into a great period of refreshment in my life. Here somebody says, and I kind of referred to this situation a little bit ago, this person says, I had secretly wished that I would be the one to be released, but when it happened, I was still shocked. I recognize we're in the middle of a recession, but this was the kind of situation that always happened to someone else, not me. While it sounds cliche, this was truly a blessing. Well, here's one that's interesting. The gentleman says, I was laid off on March 9th with no warning after working for a major manufacturer for 11 and a half years. When I told my wife, her response was, good, now you can go do something you want to do. Well, a couple more, and I'll move on here. At first, the loss of my job was very unsettling. However, in time, I've come to believe that this was God's way of getting me on to something bigger and better. And a last one here, and I'll move on. I was a little surprised that they beat me to the punch, but I thanked them, saying, I really appreciate this. I really do. Now, every year, just before Christmas, Joanna and I go to Chicago. Her birthday is right before Christmas, so we've always made it something special to overshadow the years of not having a special birthday as a little girl because it was so close to Christmas. But anyway, this last Christmas, we were really seeing things slow down dramatically. At that point, there weren't as many people out on the streets shopping, it seemed, and the streets were full of people with those quickly constructed cardboard signs who are hoping to play on the sympathy of people right at Christmas time who may have a little extra to give. So there was a lot of that, and things that just broke your heart. But one sign I saw said this, very clearly, four lines, lost my job, lost my home, lost my hope, please help. Now, what's the next step? I mean, is this really an inevitable sequence? I was reading just this morning about some of the inventions that are coming out of the slums of Nairobi, Kenya, and Africa. Now, that gets my attention because I have a son who lives in Kigali, Rwanda, helping some people who are in destitute poverty there. But the tagline on this story where these inventions are coming out of Nairobi said, when you have nothing, anything is possible. You know, that's a pretty valid thought. See, in this season that we're in right now, this is a season for hope, not despair. Now, hope or optimism, like I've said, is not about denying reality, but it's about seeing the possibilities for creating a better reality than you currently have. Now, I hear people who lost their job and their immediate knee-jerk reaction is, well, we need to turn back in the cars that we've got. We won't go on vacation this year. We'll pull the kids out of Christian school. We'll give up our golf club membership. And they just hunker down, assuming that things are going to be worse. But when I see the reality of people coming through a job loss, often they go on to start a business and make twice as much money. Often they just reposition themselves, realize they were underemployed in a previous position, do a great job search, and do the same thing. Go out and double their income. They just move on from that. Don't assume that with the job loss, even if it was unwelcome and unexpected, that things are going to get worse. That's not necessarily true at all. Again, I've been privileged to see people in these situations for many years and see how they come through the other side with hope and optimism high and with opportunities that certainly were unmatched in what they were doing previously. Now, I know that I get accused of being, you know, a glass half full kind of guy because I really do believe that every problem brings with it the seed of a solution, and I believe that the search for a solution can itself be inspiring and hopeful. But if you lose hope, you'll not be looking for solutions, and you'll miss them even if they pass right in front of your nose. There's more to be gained by focusing on those talents and gifts you know God has given you. Focus on what you're moving to, not what you're moving away from. See, when I hear people who are dealing with frustration, anger, resentment, bitterness, guilt, depression, discouragement, I know they're looking backward. They're looking at what has already happened. As soon as you can get clear on what you're moving to, you'll see a burst of optimism, boldness, confidence, enthusiasm, and those other negative emotions will start to diminish. Losing hope is a choice. Just remember, when you have nothing, anything is possible. Now, I want to talk a little bit about changing work models. Now, this is pretty terrifying for some people when all they've seen is one particular work model with parents and grandparents who have every day gone off to an office somewhere and gotten a paycheck from a company. That model is diminishing. We know that. I mean, predictions are now that by the year 2010, which we see how close we are to that, only 50% of the American workforce will be employees. Now, keep in mind, I did not say we're going to have 50% unemployment. That's not going to happen. Only 50% will be employees. CNN reported just last week that 25% of American workforce are now freelancers. So it's happening very quickly. The 50% of the American workforce who will not be employees, what are they going to be? Well, we have to be realistic about all these new terms that are being developed, that are exploding even as we speak here tonight. Distributed workers, that accounts for about 28.7 million people who work for companies kind of, but they aren't confined to traditional offices. Now, in this same line, we're going to see contingency workers, independent contractors, temps, entrepreneurs, electronic immigrants. I mean, that's a term that can be terrifying, but it can also be an opportunity. Electronic immigrants, you can kind of detect from the phrase itself, means there are people competing for jobs right in your local town who don't even live in the continental United States. They can live in Sweden, Germany, France, India, Taiwan, China, anywhere, and be competing for a large majority of the jobs that actually are available. But now the counterpoint to that is also true. That means you can be performing work for companies anywhere in the world. You aren't limited to those companies that are within a 30-minute drive of your home. Depending on the work skills that you bring to the table, you may be a candidate to work for a company where you'll never meet the people, never set foot on their physical campus, and yet you can have a very legitimate position with them and compensated well for that. Well, these are some of the kind of creative work options we have today, in addition to other things. I mean, a lot of the things that people are finding that they can do don't really line up in any way with a traditional job. Now, we have here in our property in Franklin, Tennessee, a tree that was damaged in a storm a couple years ago, damaged beyond restoration. And, of course, when a tree has that kind of damage, the logical thing to do is you cut it down, and then you have a ugly stump to deal with. Well, I'm an old farm kid, and it's hard for me to lose a tree, and I thought there's got to be a better solution than that. So I made a couple phone calls, And to make a long story short, had a lady come out here. She started with a chainsaw, very quickly went to hand chisels, and she carved two beautiful faces, one on either side of this big tree. Now, they're about 4 feet tall, the faces are. One faces our driveway, one faces out the nature trail that we have on our property. I cut it off about 12 feet off the ground. Instead of having an ugly stump to deal with, we now have a permanent piece of art. But now here's my point in that. If that gal, her name is Terry, if she were coming through high school or college and she met with a guidance counselor, chances are absolutely zero that the guidance counselor is going to tell her she ought to grow up to be a tree carver. No, that is not in any list of occupations. You'll not find that in the Dictionary of Occupational Titles. It's something that is a very unique, personalized, individualized application of passion and talent. That's where people ultimately do find fulfilling, meaningful, and profitable work. And there are lots of people who are doing that. Don't think that you have to just look at what's listed in the newspaper as your only possibilities. I mean, when Thomas Stanley did his work in writing the books The Millionaire Mind and The Millionaire Next Door, he looked for, you know, what do those people have in common who end up as decamillionaires, people worth at least $10 million? It's not IQ. It's not GPA. It's not what they majored in college. It's not the business they started, the profession they chose. The only common characteristics of people who end up extremely wealthy that he could find is that they were doing something they absolutely loved doing. That remains true. That is more a key to you finding meaningful, profitable work than anything else. Now, many of you may be saying, well, that's fine, you know, if you have a lot of leeway in terms of when you need to get work, when you need to generate income. But the counterpoint to that is simply, if you don't look at yourself first and you simply go get a job, it's likely to be a very Band-Aid solution to your long-term goals. Yes, it may give you a temporary paycheck, but it's probably not going to make your heart sing. You know, it's not going to be something that you feel like you've really found your passion and are living that out. So even though it seems like two steps backward, I encourage you. I mean, this is not something that takes a lot of time, and you can do this in 2 hours, but I tell people all the time, 85% of the process of having the confidence of proper direction in your career comes from looking inward first. It doesn't come from looking at who's hiring, where there are opportunities, where Uncle Harry says you can get a job. It comes from looking inward. If you take a fresh look at who you are, how God has uniquely gifted you in terms of skills and abilities, personality tendencies, values, dreams, and passions, then and only then can you create a clear focus, design a resume, then do a job search or start your own business, whatever direction you want to take that. But it's only by looking inward first that you can get the confidence that you're moving in a proper direction. And you can do that even when times are tough. You don't have to settle for just anything. No, if you think you have to settle for anything, it makes you a weak candidate when you go out into the marketplace, because that's very transparent. Interviewers with any skill at all will be able to detect that you don't have a clear focus, you're just looking for a paycheck, and that makes you a very unattractive candidate. You've got to bring more to the table, more confidence about what it is that you do well than just looking for a job. Now, let me talk about a couple different kinds of jobs, work here as well, that seem to come up repeatedly. Just recently, I wrote a piece about multi-level marketing, and I tend to be pretty critical of that because of the way they give people false hope, false expectations. Now, multi-level marketing is a perfectly legitimate business model, no question about it. And there are a lot of wonderful companies out here that have used that and used it very well. However, when times are tough, like right now, there's a whole lot of high-pressure recruiting going on where people are proposing that if you don't have a job and the mortgage is due on Friday, join this direct selling or multi-level marketing or network marketing company and all your troubles are going to go away. That is not true. It's simply not true. Network marketing or multi-level marketing is one particular kind of business model, and to be successful in that, you better have super sophisticated selling skills. That's what it requires. If you are absolutely pro in your sales skills, then it's a legitimate business model for you to approach. But if you're reticent and shy, don't let somebody make you believe that you can just do it on the internet, you don't have to sell, you're going to make lots of money. No, it's not going to happen. The statistics around multi-level marketing are horrible in that only about 1% of the people who get involved ever even recapture their initial investment. The average income for somebody in direct selling, meeting that kind of that particular industry, the average income is $2,400 a year. $2,400 a year, that's $200 a month. So you can see that in general, that's not going to be a great solution if you, in fact, need a job. Now, again, the question is not, is it a legitimate business company or whatever? The question is, does that business model fit you? That's the real core issue. Does it fit you? If it does, then you can get involved in any one of 20 different companies. Doesn't matter as much what the product is. It's a business model that fits you. But if that does not fit you, if you're not social, gregarious, outgoing, backslapper, schmoozer kind of person, you're never going to make it in a multi-level marketing company. And don't try to kid yourself. You'll end up just frustrating yourself and wasting valuable time. Now, I had somebody recently ask, can we find something as a family that would perhaps take us to a foreign country where it immerses in another language, but where we wouldn't just be on vacation, where we would have work to do and actually get paid for it? Well, yes, there are thousands of opportunities like that. If you have a motorhome and you want to live in that and just travel around the country, but you want to cover your expenses and make a little money, that's not unreasonable. Now, if you want to try out something, you think that maybe you'd like to be a dog groomer or a tour guide up in the mountains, whatever, there are places, sites that you can go to where you can check out those kind of opportunities. Yeah, there really are. I had the easiest way to do that, obviously, in an audio format like this. I can't give lots of internet sites. It just doesn't work. But if you go to 48days.com and just click on newsletters, the newsletter that I did on May 19th of 2009 has in there a section called, Do You Want a Cool Job? And if you want a cool job, there are a whole bunch of listings there, sites where you can click through and get real valid information about things that you can do that would take you to exotic places and, yes, ways that you can still get paid to do that. You've got to be aware that as much as we hear the bad news, there's a whole lot of good things going on. I mean, we hear about people in the mortgage industry who have just given up, because obviously nobody can buy a home. I talked to a friend recently in the mortgage business, and I was expecting to hear some kind of a sad story. I hadn't talked to him in a couple of years. He says, Dan, I had the biggest month I ever had in my life last month. With these low interest rates, we're refinancing homes faster than we can get people in and out the door. I have a friend who's in construction. Now, again, certainly we know, the newspapers tell us that nobody's building houses. You can't make any money, builders are going to go bust, all of them. Well, that's not true. My goodness, this gentleman who's a friend of mine in my Wednesday morning group says he's trying to avoid answering the phone because he's so far behind in high-end quality work that he's committed to do. He can't keep up with the requests coming in. As people are traveling less, maybe not buying new homes, they're interested in remodeling, improvements like never before. I mean, things have not ground to a halt. They're just different, and you have to be able to see things that other people do not see. Now, I want to give you a couple specific lists here. One is, how do you do a job search? How do you get opportunities that other people don't do? Now, this is laid out. Many of you have 48 days to the work you love, but I'm going to give you the essence of the job search process right here if you're needing a job. You need to identify 30 to 40 target companies. Now, what I mean by that is you don't need to wait on what you see in the newspaper, what you see on Monster.com, any of the internet sites, hot jobs. You don't need to do that. If you look at those, you have already lost your best window of opportunity, because what you see there, 3,000 other people who have better qualifications than you see the same thing. You've already lost your window of opportunity. That's why people who respond to ads in the newspaper can be extremely frustrated, because they say, I sent out, 15 resumes, never even got an interview. Nobody's hiring. The economy is dead. No, not at all. It's just that's a very poor process to use in a job search. Recognize that only about 12% of real jobs are ever listed anywhere. That means 88% of the jobs we have out there, and tending to be the better jobs, are never advertised anywhere. Good companies let their employees bring them new prospects. They reward their employees for bringing them new prospects. I was at a meeting Dave Ramsey's organization recently, and one of the things they do is they go through and they award a cash bonus to somebody who recommended a new employee who has then been there successfully for 90 days. I mean, they don't have to go anywhere. With people knowing they're going to get a cash bonus, they're going to bring people that they like, people they trust, people they know would make a good contribution to the organization, and any great company out there is doing the same kind of thing. They aren't going to advertise in newspapers or on Monster.com. 88% of the opportunities then never appear in any format like that where it's advertised at all. So how do you identify the 30 to 40 companies? You don't wait to see who's hiring, where there's an opening. You identify, based on what I know about myself, the skills that I have, the talents that I bring to the table, the history that I have, these are companies that could potentially use my services. You're in the driver's seat on this. You need to stay in the driver's seat at every step of the way. So you identify 30 to 40 companies. Who could use a graphic designer, a bookkeeper, a computer programmer, a sales and marketing person? I mean, virtually any company could use any of those things that I just talked about, but you identify. Do you want to work with a small company, one that has 10 to 50 employees? Do you want to work with a bigger one? Do you want to work in the medical field? Do you want to work in construction? Do you want to work with a nonprofit? I mean, any of those things are possibilities. You decide, you make your list, and certainly make it reasonable in terms of logistics. If you go on Monster.com and you see an opportunity that really is appealing to you, and you happen to live in Nashville, Tennessee, and the opportunity is in Seattle, are you going to just pick up and move because of a job prospect? I mean, that's not the way that I encourage people to plan meaningful lives. If you have connections, your children are in school, you're involved in community church, there may be a whole lot of reasons you don't want to leave where you are, and trust me, you don't have to. There are opportunities all around you, close enough. You don't have to do that. You don't have to move because of a job. Look where you are based on the criteria you establish for the life that you want to have. You ought to be able to identify the 30 to 40 companies. I mean, you may want to draw a line 30 miles from where you live. Just draw a circle. You identify companies there. You're in the driver's seat. Now, I'm going to move on here because of time, but that's the first step in how to do a job search. You identify the 30 to 40 companies. Then next, you send a letter of introduction to each company. Now, it requires nothing of the recipient. You determine who is in a position to make a decision. Don't send it to human resources, personnel, to whom it may concern. You identify a person. You'll find if you need the information, I mean, receptionists tend to be extremely helpful in these kind of things. Don't tell them you're looking for a job. Ask, who's the head of, who's the office administrator there? Who's head of sales and marketing? I need to get something to them. I've forgotten how to spell their last name. Whatever. Get their name, but send a letter of introduction. It just says, hi, my name is Dan. These are some of my skills. I'm exploring some new opportunities in this area. please expect my cover letter and resume within the next 4 to 5 days. That's it. But what you're doing is you're starting to create what we call top-of-mind positioning. Please be aware that in this process, you are selling. You may not like the idea of going door-to-door selling water filters, but if you're looking for a job, you have a product to sell, and that product is you. And the more that you see it in that way, the quicker you'll get the results that you're wanting. So send a letter of introduction. Then, 4 or 5 days later, do send the cover letter and resume. Those most people are familiar with, so do that. Do it without exception. Make it appealing. Get examples. Get examples out of 48 days or on the internet, wherever you want to. Just get good examples of how to do that. Make sure your resume is a sales brochure for where you want to go. Now, for some of you who just lost a job, you may recognize you hated that industry. You don't want to work in that industry. Make sure you don't have a resume that positions you as a candidate for that industry again. Just tweak it. Modify it. Recognize it's not just a chronological history of what you've done. No, a resume is a sales brochure for what you want to go do. Make sure that it's reflected in that way. So you send a cover letter and resume. That's really the third step that I'm talking about here. The fourth one, extremely important, a phone follow-up. You've got to follow up with a phone call. Now, my experience is that only about 1% to 2% of job hunters are doing that. But it's really easy to bring your name to the top of the list if you just do the follow-up call. Now, what you're doing in this process of repetition is creating what we call in sales and marketing top-of-mind positioning. If you are selling weed eaters, if you can get me to see or hear about that 3 times, my response rate goes up dramatically. We know that. You're doing the same thing here. If you can get somebody to see or hear about you 3 times, their response rate to you goes up dramatically. Now, let me kind of put this in to frame this just a little bit before we move on. That means, statistically, if you are just sending out a cover letter and resume or just filling out applications somewhere, we know that you have to do that 254 times to statistically have a chance at getting a job doing that alone. But if you add the other components, if you add sending an introduction letter and then doing a phone follow-up, it drops dramatically. It drops to like 1 out of 15. Just an amazing difference. Doesn't mean you're any more qualified. Doesn't mean you're any nicer. Doesn't mean you have another degree. None of that. It just simply means you're using a process that a lot of people don't use, and that gets results. And this is a process I've been using with people for many years and continue to hear stories. In 48 Days of the Work You Love, there's a story about a young man who had really no relevant experience at all, recent college grad, not much to go on, and he got 6 job offers in 10 days. Now, he wanted to take the very first job offer, ran by my office, and told me about it all excited, and I said, well, that's great. You need to tell him no. Well, he was mortified because he said, geez, they want me. It's more money than I expected being fresh out of college. And I said, well, it is those things, but it doesn't fit you. Now that you've actually had an interview, you know it's not a good fit. Well, he trusted me and went on, and that's one of those stories where, you know, he had 6 job offers in 10 days and took a position that was an extremely better fit for him, more money, and something that he really was passionate about. Now, let me just emphasize again in this. To get a job, you have to sell yourself. You know, to start a business or run it successfully, you have to sell a product or service every day. We used to hear in business, build a better mousetrap and people beat a path to your door. That's not true anymore. It just doesn't work that way. You can have the next hula hoop or frisbee or a better mousetrap. It doesn't matter unless you get out there and sell it. Now, we're inundated with sales and marketing messages to a point of overload, but that's still the way to get results, and the same thing is true if you need a job. You're selling yourself, and you have to see it in that way. Now, here's some of the statements that I'm hearing right now from people who haven't learned how to sell. Now, these may step on some toes, but it's somebody who hasn't learned how to sell. Dan, I've applied for lots of jobs, but no one's hiring. Dan, everywhere I go, they tell me I'm overqualified. I've just got to stay on unemployment since the economy is so bad. I'd love to start a business, but I don't have any money. I've been rejected by 10 publishers. I guess I'm not an author after all. Now, I could go on and on. I have lots of examples of where people have given up or they become convinced that nobody's hiring, things are bad, you can't start a business now, and all of those things. Well, those aren't true. I see people define those feelings, those circumstances every day. It's simply that the people who feel trapped haven't learned how to sell themselves effectively. Now, I've got a lot of questions coming in here, and I'm seeing a lot of questions that revolve around that theme, where people say, I'm 57 years old, so I know that works against me everywhere I go. Well, be careful about assuming that. You know, there are a lot of companies out here who are looking for people who are seasoned work veterans, who have better work ethics and sense of responsibility than the younger crowd coming in. There are companies who specifically look for people over 50 to bring on their workforce. If people are telling you you're overqualified, too young, too old, for the most part, those are polite ways of them saying, we don't really want you on our team. Don't take that at face value that you're too young, too old, overqualified, or whatever it happens to be. Look a little deeper. Why are these people not excited about having me on their team? That's what you have to look at. Now, let me kind of go in a little deeper in that area because, again, if you've been listening to my material, reading my material, you know that I put a whole lot of emphasis on personal characteristics. We're not robots. Companies don't hire a set of skills. They hire a whole person, and that's very critical in this process. See, back in 1929, following the stock market crash, there were a whole lot of businesses and factories shutting their doors. Millions were out of work. Now, I know it sounds a lot like today. In that environment, Dale Carnegie first introduced the principles of his little book that's become an all-time classic, How to Win Friends and Influence People. But what he observed is that there were a whole lot of people who had the same kind of education, background, work experience, abilities, and yet some would continue to go on to new opportunities with seemingly no problem, and others just got stuck. What he determined is that 85% of a person's ability to get ahead is due to what he called human engineering. That has to do with a person's enthusiasm, energy, pleasing smile, tone of voice. Now, that's pretty much true today as well. And I see that being played out right now. Again, when we've got massive unemployment, we've got thousands of people competing for any one job, here's some things that you can do to make yourself a top candidate. These come right out of that classic little book. Give honest and sincere appreciation. Remember that a person's name is to that person the sweetest and most important sound in any language. I mean, how difficult is that, to just remember somebody's name when you meet them? And yet few people do that. They're thinking about what they're going to say, and they miss the person's name, even in a first introduction. Well, here's a couple more. Be a good listener. Encourage others to talk about themselves. Smile. Well, if there's one thing you can do to change your chances of success in an interview, it's smile and be enthusiastic. Now, this doesn't mean you need to change who you are, become something you're not, become the class clown. But in that situation, you better think up. Sit up, hold your shoulders back, speak up, have a firm handshake. Those things convey the message that you want conveyed in the first part of an interview. Again, keep in mind, most hiring decisions are made in the first 3 to 5 minutes of an interview. It's not the fine print on the fourth page of your resume. That has very little to do with it. It's the interviewer asking themselves, do I like this person? Is this person going to fit in as part of the team? Are they fun to be around? Well, another tip here is make the other person feel important and do it sincerely. Now, these are the kind of things, it may seem to be almost corny. or gimmicky? Well, frame it however you want. We just see the results borne out time and time again. Now think about the people that you know who are out here looking for jobs. They're angry. They're frustrated. They want the government to fix things. They want the church to fix things. They want the companies to do things differently. I run into people like that every day. How attractive do you think that person is as a job candidate? No, nobody wants them on their team. Can you change that without having to go back and pay for an additional MBA behind your name? Absolutely. You can change it tomorrow if you know the things you're doing that are counterproductive. And a lot of people are just simply doing that. Criticize, condemn, and complain? Nobody wants somebody like that on their team. If you talk about that, like that about the last company that you work for, they're going to assume you're going to have the same feelings about the new company. They aren't going to risk it, not going to bring you on board. Well, enough about that, how to win friends and influence people. Let me just finish up this section here, so that I would go 48 minutes. I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to switch to some questions. Now, I'm going to keep my presentation to 48 minutes, as I promised I would, but then I'm going to switch to some of the questions that are coming in here and take perhaps another 30 minutes or so just to scan through some of the questions and answer those as well. Here's some tips to break the cycle of losing. Now, if you are in a desperate situation, I mean, this is like a pin in a balloon. I mean, if you lost your job, it can quickly lead to stress in other areas of your life. Obviously, it leads to a stress financially, usually going to spill over into relationships, and then all of a sudden you're feeling down. So on Monday morning, instead of being out hitting the streets, you know, you're surfing the internet, trying to confuse yourself that you're really doing a job search, or you're, worse yet, you're sitting on the couch watching old Seinfeld reruns, eating Pringles, and you start to deteriorate physically. I mean, all these things work together. They'll either spiral down together or spiral up together. So what you have to make sure that you do in a job loss situation, make sure that you stay ultimately successful in other areas of your life. Be making massive deposits of success in other areas of your life. What I usually recommend to people, start with doing what you can to stay sharp physically. If that's walking 2 miles a day, then start with that. Then notice, you know, I often have people walk with me on our property out here, and it tells me a lot about the person if there are rabbits, squirrels, groundhogs, birds around, and the person never sees a thing. And you can tell that. Go for a walk and notice the birds, the children, the trees, and the sky as you're walking around. I would encourage you to spend at least 2 hours a day reading or listening to positive, uplifting materials. Years ago when I went through a tough time, I started that practice, and it was so dramatic that I never discontinued it. And all these years later, I still spend at least 2 hours a day reading or listening to positive materials. Another tip, invite a friend. Treat yourself to a great concert. Now, I happen to live in Nashville, Tennessee, so there's not a day that goes by that you can't take advantage of a wonderful concert or musical event that's absolutely free right here. But with universities, churches, wherever you are, chances are that's true where you live as well. Give yourself that kind of a refreshing break. You might want to take a class. There are multiple agencies and churches that are offering free career transition classes and workshops in really any city in America. Volunteer to help someone else. You know, a man asked Carl Menninger, who was a famous psychiatrist, said, what would you advise a person to do if he felt a nervous breakdown coming on? Most people expected him to reply, well, consult a psychiatrist. But to their astonishment, Dr. Menninger replied, I'd tell them to lock up their house, go across the railroad tracks, find someone in need, and do something to help that person. Now, I see a lot of people that are taking advantage of that kind of mentality today, people who are helping others who are hurting, whether it's they're hurting because of the recent tornadoes, or whether they're just down and out themselves, maybe through the Salvation Army or Habitat for Humanity. Those are great things to get involved with, even as you're struggling yourself. It'll give you a new perspective on really what you have and what your options are. Well, I'm going to kind of wrap that up as the tips for you if you're out of work. But I'm going to spend, again, about 30 minutes perhaps just going through some questions. A lot of you are sending questions in here as we speak, and I'll just go through some of those. Not all of them, more than we can handle, but I'll pick some out and just kind of address those. John from San Antonio, Texas says, Dan, there's a company I'm interested to work for. It's called Primerica. It's a financial service company. I would like to know if you or anyone in your staff have heard of this company and if it's worth spending my money to enroll in this company. They say you'll make a lot of money and be helping people with their finances. Well, John, yes, I'm very familiar with Primerica. That falls under the category of what I addressed a few minutes ago when I talked about network marketing or multi-level marketing companies. If that model fits you, if you're good at recruiting, generating enthusiasm in other people, then that kind of a model will work well. But the focus with Primerica is more on recruiting other people than it is giving people financial services. You aren't going to make much money if all you're doing is helping people with their finances. The emphasis is on building your own team, building your downline. And I suspect from the tone of your question, that's not what you're looking for. So if that is true, then no, that would not be a company. You need to look at some other options. Chris from Grand Rapids says, I've been displaced at work after nearly 14 years with the company and may be losing my job in about 2 weeks. I've just graduated with a bachelor's in communication. In school, I was full of self-confidence as I understood the expectations placed on me. Now I lack expectations and feel unsure of myself. How can I go about gaining back self-confidence and sell myself into a new career or job? Well, Chris, if you've been displaced at work, but you've just graduated with a degree, I would assume that as you were working toward a degree, you thought that would start a new season in your life. My goodness, just move forward with that. Expect that the degree positions you for things that you have not been doing previously. So we have to get past this idea that being displaced somehow is a black mark on our work record, our resume. No, it's not. It just happens. Any company knows that there are things happening out here. There are good, reliable, loyal, dependable people who lose their jobs every day. Has nothing to do with responsibility or competence. It just is part of the workplace that we're in. So be careful about letting a job loss destroy your self-esteem and self-confidence. You still are the same person you were yesterday before you knew about the job loss. Pull yourself up by that, knowing who you are, knowing the success you have in other areas as a parent, as a spouse, as a community member, what you're doing physically, what you're doing personal development. Those things ought to give you the confidence to hold your head high and go out here and start on a new path. But it sounds like you should have created your own new path, and they were just a little bit ahead of you in doing that. So just pick it up from there. Dan, I've read 48 Days No More Mondays after 10 years as a newspaper. This comes from Patrick in Duluth, Minnesota. 10 years as a newspaper journalist, recently laid off. I'm still trying to figure out what direction to go with my writing skills. Do I remain in journalism as a freelance writer? And he goes on with a lengthy question about that. You know, should he stay in writing or move on to something else? He talks about the fact that he really enjoys writing. So we have to realize newspapers are in a crunch. A whole lot of newspapers have closed their doors. A whole lot of magazines have closed their doors or will in the coming months. You can't expect to have a position in journalism in one of those old traditional line companies anymore. It's changing. Does that mean there's no work for a journalist? Not at all. You have to look at what's happening in the digital world. What are opportunities where you could do freelance work or copywriting or write for magazines that are online? There's a whole lot of information out there. There's a whole lot of content that requires good writing. It's just done differently. I mean, even full-length books, the kind of things that I'm looking at every day, are moving more to a digital format, and some will never be seen in a physical form. So you just switch your skills to the changes that are taking place in your industry. Don't think that your industry is dead, because it certainly is not. Well, Jennifer from Maybrook, New York says, I have an interview for a government job that would be for at least 2 years. It's an intern to full-time physician program. However, it would not be in my field, but it would use some of the skills I have. If hired, should I stick it out for security or continue to look for work in my field that I'm passionate about? Well, Jennifer, I am never one to promote taking a job that you know does not line up with your passions or highest level of skill. Trying to do something just because you have the ability to do it is a recipe for disaster. I talk to lots of attorneys, physicians, dentists, and pastors who have proven their ability to do what they're doing, but they have miserable lives. See, it's not enough to just have the ability. Anything that you do that really is meaningful, fulfilling, purposeful work has to blend three components. Those are your skills and abilities, your personality tendencies, your values, dreams, and passions. It has to have all of those. It can't have just one. Well, Jim from St. Louis says, Dan, I've had my own company, a video company, since 1998. So over 10 years. My primary customers have been, a couple nonprofits. I won't mention the names. I specialize in fundraising videos. Their incomes have plummeted, and so have mine. I'm at the point where I'm self-employed and hate my boss. Now, there's a great phrase. I'm self-employed and hate my boss. All right. Look in the mirror. Talk to that boss. And he goes on. Jim says, I wish I'd been laid off. At least then I might have a severance package. Well, if you've been self-employed since 1998, your primary customers have been nonprofits. Nonprofits are struggling right now. I would not walk away from everything that you've got and what you've built and having your own business. I would simply go back and look at who are a new customer pool, who are new targets that I could use for the work that I do so well. I mean, nonprofits are one particular category of business. And as giving is down right now, and I think that'll be temporary, but it is right now, don't just go down with the sinking ship. Look for new customers. Does that require having a clear strategy and plan of action? Absolutely. Just identify what is your strategic plan. Identify 30 to 40 customers that could potentially use you. Go after those. See, starting your own business is much the same as getting a job. In either case, you have to sell something that you're doing, and if you're selling a service and you need to find customers for your business, the process is much the same as getting out here and interviewing for that position that you want. Now, that also opens up another category that I didn't even really touch on tonight, and that is you may find a company that's not large enough to use your services full-time. What if they're part of that 97.4% of the companies that only have 99 or fewer employees? That size company is not likely to have a full-time graphic designer, human resource person, accountant, computer programmer, but they may be able to use you 1 or 2 days a week. What if you found 2 or 3 companies in the same position? They're not large enough to have you full-time for your skills, but they could use you 1 or 2 days a week or 1 day a month. Just work the combinations. That opens up millions of new opportunities that you do not have and are not looking at if you're looking for the one company that can pay you a guaranteed wage for 40 hours. Just is the way it works, and that's where some of the new opportunities are coming from. Lots of the new opportunities are coming from in that particular area. Okay, another question here. A couple more. Well, boy, some of these are really poignant. Wow. Here, let me answer one from Molly in Elkhart, Indiana. Assuming I have the money to buy my dream business with cash, the Dave Ramsey way, and assuming it's a good buy, how much extra disposable money should I have on hand? What percentage of pro forma income should I have on hand now? Or is there another metric I should be looking for? Well, this, I love questions that deal with business, but this is so specific that it's tough to really generalize. Molly, it would depend on the business that you're looking at. I mean, there are people who are starting internet businesses where they're going to do something on eBay where they have a 3-day reserve of money because you can be generating money that quickly. If you're talking about a traditional business like a bowling alley, service station, hardware store, or restaurant, you better have 1 to 3 years of living expenses set aside while you grow that kind of traditional business. So it varies dramatically depending on the business, but make sure that you can see it working on paper before you try to make it a reality. Here, Tim from Elkhart, Indiana, asked this. My employer laid me off but wants to hire me as a consultant. I see this having a potential for interfering with my job search for a full-time job. Do you have any advice for me? That is a great scenario that a lot of people are exercising, where a company lays them off, they go right back to the same company, propose to offer their skills there again, but as a consultant rather than as an employee. And there are people who are working half as much and duplicating their previous income because it's an advantage to both parties in many ways. It's an advantage to a company to not have somebody on as an employee but have them as a consultant or freelance vendor. So be open to that as a possibility. But if your previous company wants to use you, I would encourage you to explore that as a possibility where you do act as a consultant to them. Once you see the potential there, you may decide that it's not a good use of your time to keep looking for a full-time job. I've seen a lot of people transition almost by default into being consultants and then discover that's a much better model than trying to find a position as a full-time employee. And you could find a position as a consultant with a company where you're working full-time and you're there for 6 months. I mean, it's not just where it's some little part-time thing. No, you may be there for an extended period of time. Okay, a couple more here. Well, here's someone that says, Dan, I read No More Mondays just before I got laid off. I want to thank you. It's made a major difference for me when the layoff hit. I was, in fact, grateful for the liberation and freedom. Okay. A lot of these people are just thanking me for what I'm doing here. Here's one. Beth from Denver says, how do I handle a termination situation when I'm filling out an application that asks or during an interview? What do you say without saying too much? I want to be truthful. However, the termination was somewhat bogus based on hearsay, et cetera. Would not use that supervisor for a reference for sure, but how do I handle that? Great question, Beth. A lot of people have gotten terminated. Whether that was for just cause or whether it was just a natural downsizing the company was doing really doesn't make much difference as you move forward. And you don't need to go into great detail about that. If you got fired because you were incompetent, I mean, obviously you don't want to share that in your next interview. Not at all. You can simply state that, you know, the company and I agreed that we were not on mutual paths, our goals didn't match up, and I was let go. No harm in that, no shame in that, but don't go deeper. Don't go digging up things that really are going to hurt you when you are in the job search, when you're talking to new potential people that will hire you. John from Madison, Mississippi says, I've played the apply and wait game. How do you get to someone in some of these companies? John, you be persistent. Don't just wait. If you send a resume and cover letter and wait, you're going to be waiting next year at this time because the chances of a company taking the initiative based on getting your resume are slim to none. Does it happen? Yes, but it's rare, especially in today's environment because they have so many people to choose from. So you be persistent. You be the one that's calling, emailing every time they turn around. If you have interviewed with a company, you've earned the right to know what's going on. So you've earned the right to call back and say, where are you in the decision-making process? I just want to let you know I'm still interested in the position. Seems like a good fit. I think I'd bring good value to your company. Where are you in that decision-making process? You can do that every 3 days until they tell you, we made a decision. It's not going to be you. Thanks for your interest. But more often than not, you'll find that they say, you know what? Why don't you come back in here? I mean, a lot of things happen in the interview process. And if you interviewed 2 weeks ago and haven't heard anything, by all means, pick up the phone tomorrow and call them. Don't wait. Be aggressive and persistent about following up after you've had an interview. Okay, Hank from Atlanta says, I hear a lot about how to find a job, but the bigger question is, how do you find your passion? 20 years in corporate life has burned me out. With an MBA, just do not want to sit behind a desk anymore. Well, that really addresses the heart of what I wanted to convey tonight, Hank, and that is, yeah, don't just settle for an opportunity. Know what it is that is unique about you. What makes you tick? What is your passion, your dreams, your values? And the wonderful thing about having some life experience is you've got roadblocks all along the way that tell you what those things are. You ought to be able to look back and see the recurring themes and things that really got your attention. Themes in those things that put you in the zone. What is it that when you're doing it, time just flies by? You can't do that well when you're 21 or 28 years old. What you do is get a little life experience, and then you can look back and see how those things kept reoccurring and how it positioned you. Now you know what your focus is and what your passion is. You know, I really grieve for somebody who is over 30 and doesn't know what their passion is. But with that much life experience, I think there's enough information there. God doesn't want to keep us in the dark, and certainly life experience helps unpack, helps reveal to us what your passions are. When I work with somebody who's 45 and they say they still don't know what their passions are, I don't start them by going out here and saying, well, here's a great opportunity, here's a new trend, here are new things that are happening in the environment, places where you could get a job. No. What I do is simply help them essentially peel the onion, start peeling back the layers. I mean, we know that you talk to little kids that are 4 or 5 years old and ask how many can sing, dance, draw, write. They all raise their hands because they can do all those things. Life has a way of narrowing us down in what we think we have the ability to do, and that includes academic education. It tends to narrow the choices that we think we have rather than broaden them. Well, when you go through unexpected change, it's a great time to wipe the slate clean, peel back those layers again, get back in touch with that 5-year-old or 12-year-old that you were. I have some wonderful experiences that happened when I was 13 years old that really helped me kind of chart the course of my life, but only as I look back on that about 30 years after they had actually happened. Okay, getting some questions about things that I've recently written here. Here comes a question from Archie in Cookeville, Tennessee. Says, I'd love to do what you do, Dan. What do you think my chances are? Well, I've had a lot of people approach me over the years who said, Dan, I want to do what you do. And my answer was always, how can I help you do that? I've never tried to stop somebody from duplicating what I do, and I've had the pleasure of working with a lot of people who, in fact, are doing what I'm doing. They've gone on to be life and career coaches and doing it very successfully, and I'm thrilled when that happens. If you want to see more about what I do, one of the best places to plug in is 48days.net. Now, that's what they call a social networking site. I try to avoid using that term because I don't want to know where you had coffee this morning or really a whole lot of other things about where you stopped and got a hamburger for lunch. No, we see it as an idea network. It's a place where people share ideas and people learn from each other. You can plug in and get a massive brain trust at 48days.net. Again, I'm not selling anything. It's totally free, but you go there and you'll see a lot of people who want to be coaches. I mean, we have a whole lot of people there who are there because they want to do what I do, and I continually write and do teleseminars for those people and help them along. I'll certify them by reviewing a competency overview and then post them on the site as a coach if, in fact, they want to do that. So there's a lot of ways that I have been encouraging coaches and encouraging people to do what I do for many years. Thanks for the question. Well, let me just pick out maybe one or two more here. Ralph says, how can one overcome being blackballed by an industry? I've not worked for over 6 years with no avail finding a job. Well, I don't know what industry you're talking about, but unless you're a brain surgeon, I'd simply change industries. Can't imagine that there's one industry that holds all the potential for things that you can do. I mean, if you're great at customer service, you're great at sales and marketing, you're great at budgeting and forecasting, I mean, whatever it is that you describe as your skills, those skills have application in multiple industries, not just one. I mean, I've worked with a lot of airline pilots over the years who have lost their jobs. Well, if all they can do is fly an airplane, they're in trouble when they lose their job and there's thousands of other pilots looking for positions. But if they recognize they have transferable areas of competence, they can very effectively go into other industries and other businesses. And I'm confident that you can do the same. Okay. Well, let me just end with this. This is kind of an open-ended one. Becky from Ohio says, Dan, is now a good time to purchase an existing business in Tennessee? Well, personally, I think now is a wonderful time to purchase a business anywhere in the country. If you have some reserves saved up, I mean, now's a wonderful time because we're seeing a real cleansing where a whole lot of people who thought they were business people have decided they aren't. They're ready to throw in the towel. Here where I live, we have, well, the new Nissan headquarters is just a stone's throw from my house here, and the local newspaper says that we have 150 restaurants within a one-mile radius of that new Nissan headquarters. Now, there are a whole lot of those restaurants that are struggling, not unexpectedly so. I would not choose to open or buy a restaurant in this area. There's way too many of them. I think it's hard to find that unique niche that sets you apart. But if I were interested in the restaurant business, I would certainly find other places. I mean, you can go outside of this area 30 miles and have opportunities if that's what you want to do. So, yes, it's a good time. But it's a time when a whole lot of people are seeing that they are not candidates for what they were trying to do. I mean, there's an old saying that in a tornado, even a turkey can fly. And it simply means when things are easy, anybody can be in business. Anybody can be in real estate. Anybody can be in the mortgage business. And on and on and on. Anybody can be building. But when times are tough, then it forces people to really run efficient businesses. And the same thing is true if you're looking for a job. It just requires you to be more efficient. Nobody can be sloppy anymore in today's environment. Well, I'm going to end with that. Again, this has been a long evening, 48 minutes of talking about the workplace in general, and then answering some questions here that I hope you found helpful. Again, this is Dan Miller, your host. Again, I value your input that I get every day from you all, not only input but encouragement, as well as sharing your heartaches and struggles that you're going through. I hope that we can continue to provide hope and encouragement, but also more than that, to help you see with eyes that other people don't see, to just recognize there are opportunities out here. Don't get caught up in the latest news that you see in the newspapers, magazines, and TV. They get paid to try to create drama by having bad news, but look beneath that. Stop watching TV. Talk to friends. Let your ideas germinate. Put a plan of action together. You'll be amazed as you can walk into this next season of your life. So I'm just encouraging you, as always, to keep believing that you can find the work that you love. This is Dan Miller. Good evening.